So let's start with your impressions so far of Ebertfest and your impressions so far of Champagne.
Well, I've had an impression of Ebertfest for years. Unfortunately, I never came here before. I wish I had. So my impression goes to before arriving here. Last night, I was incredibly impressed by what Chaz and everybody from the university and Andy and Nate are doing to, you know, kind of keep all these people who are trying to make films with great substance. It's not just diversity that this festival this year is, but it's also people that are trying to change the world in a positive way and empower people with films and TV shows that help us understand what's going on and how we might, at this time of great, great, great change, and there's never been a time of change in my lifetime like what's happening now. The fact that you see all these different kinds of people here and the different kinds of movies they're making was very powerful. Last night, Andy Davis was showing The Fugitive, which I guess I had seen on the big screen way back in the day, for sure. But it was great to see it on the big screen, you know.
Your relationship with Roger, did you ever meet him or did you just read his critiques?
No, I knew Roger extremely well.
Okay.
And as I said, we're kind of both bridge builders in the sense that as I was a festival director and both in Seattle and in Louisiana and helped start Sundance and all that, but also an exhibitor and a distributor, distributing movies and helped on marketing movies. So Roger and I and a lot of the critics who are on this panel right now are in kind of the same business of trying to build the bridge from filmmakers to audiences or from the subject matter that then filmmakers pick up on to audiences, et cetera. So it was we're on the same team in a sense. And what we would do specifically is I worked on a lot of films that had extremely compelling word of mouth and had media hooks and critical appeal, but might not be simple to market like Superman 5 or, you know, something like that. So there were films with, you know, like Hoosiers or Gandhi's or Desperately Seeking Susan's and things that were a bit of a challenge to reach their potential audiences, which sometimes had different kinds of segments. We all kind of worked together on that stuff. And Roger is somebody I knew extremely well. Roger and I were together in 9/11. I remember that with Elvis Mitchell and stuff.
What was that story?
It's not a great story. I'm just saying that we happened to be in Toronto, okay, sitting at a cafe. But speaking of that, I would see Roger at lots of film festivals. Whether it was Cannes or Sundance or Toronto or, you know, other places too. And so is mostly where I saw him, but I'd see him when he was in L.A. too, doing other things too.
What made him so great? I mean, I've heard him described as this generation's greatest critic. What made him like that?
Well, I think what made him that is he was a passionate advocate. He was a very, very, very good critic, but there's lots of very, very, very good critics. He specifically used not just the Chicago Sun-Times, but the television shows he was on, et cetera, to become a huge advocate. And what you get, and even as exhibitors, you try to build credibility with your audiences. So, you know, if you're playing a picture, they kind of know that, you know, you picked it because it's something special. The same thing goes for, you know, Roger and getting behind a particular movie. You build up a certain credibility. But the thing that was distinct about him, it was his passion and unique, thing of getting behind movies, going beyond being a critic to being an advocate.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the film now. Obviously, the plot of it is fiction, but in just looking at some interviews in preparation for this interview, you've been quoted in the past as saying they got your mannerisms spot on, at least in that point in your life. You want to talk about Jeff Bridges' portrayal of you?
Like this? Yeah, I mean, look, Jeff and I were born within 2 weeks of each other, okay, in California. So Our cultural experience is very similar. I mean, I'm Giants because I'm in Northern California. He's Dodgers. But short of that, if there was a new Beatles or Beach Boys or Temptations song, we heard it the same day. When Kennedy was shot, we were both in classrooms at the same time in eighth grade or whatever, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, that kind of, he was there. We spent a fair amount of time together, too. What was the question?
Just to comment on his portrayal of you.
So the body language he got, the character stuff he got, when Joel and Ethan first called me up, they said we're doing this movie with Goodman and Bridges, and sadists that they are. And these boys, if they hadn't found a creative outlet, would be putting hamsters in wood chippers, but they figure out a way to do it with people instead. Okay, and have some fun off it in their black humor sense. So they said Goodman and Bridges, and they at that point I was maybe 34 pounds heavier, and so I was on the cusp. It could have gone either way, and they let me hang there for like 30 seconds, knowing what I'm thinking, that if it's Goodman, it's going to be some Hollywood ne'er-do-well who's absolutely insane, and, women are going to see me on the street and run the opposite way, et cetera. They just let it sit there for like 30 seconds and get it. Dude, don't worry, it's Jeff Bridges. So there you go with that. But, he did a – look, Jeff Bridges is a phenomenal actor, and nobody, Academy Award winner and all that kind of stuff, and no matter so many different things he's done, from – Last Picture Show on, and other stuff. So he gets the stuff right and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was an honor, and he got the feeling of the character and the guy who tells it like it is, which is what the dude does. He's the holy fool who tells it like it is.
So it was a film, as you know, that kind of became a cult classic later. So I guess I'm wondering how long after the initial release did it really start to hit you that, okay, this film is going to be a big part of my life going forward?
That's an interesting question. I mean, it was right away, even though it wasn't quote-unquote successful necessarily at the box office. But then, when all these things started happening, these sociological phenomena like Lebowski Fest and things like that, it became pretty clear that something was going on and that it was becoming a movie that people were watching again and again, and all kinds of people. By the way, the biggest, this is a movie that lots of Republicans watch at Thanksgiving and Christmas, as it turns out, because It's a Wonderful Life. But, you get these family things and people maybe are drinking and, it's going to maybe turn ugly. So they put on Big Lebowski and all of a sudden the family come together and having a bunch of laughs. It's the default movie for most sports teams, all bands, everybody in the Army, et cetera. People who are very busy but have downtime and maybe can just put it on for two or three scenes. Okay, you don't have to watch the whole movie. You can put two or three scenes on the team bus on the way there or the band thing, and you're going to feel better. It's like a drug. It's like going to make you feel better.
Why do you think that is? Why does it have staying power?
Because it's hilarious. There's phenomenal actors. And, you got Turturro and Goodman and Bridges and Julianne Moore and Steve Buscemi and Phil Hoffman, and on and on. By the way, quick thing that not many people know. George C. They were doing a remake for television of 12 Angry Men, and my friend Eddie Olmos was there, and so I stopped by the set, and he introduces me to George C. Scott. And George C. Scott says to me, he says, by the way, this is the dude, big laughing. And George Scott says, I was offered that part. Really? And I read the script and I didn't get it. And then I reread it, and I still didn't get it. By the way, this is after Fargo. These guys have already won an Academy Award, okay, and had two or three movies out by that time. So it's not like, who are these guys? And he said, I just didn't get it. So George C. Scott was going to play. Can you imagine that? Not that the guy who didn't do it didn't nail it. He did a really good job. But imagine that, George C. Scott going at it with the dude on the whole, on all that stuff, So interesting.
Last question I have, and it wasn't on my list, but you brought up Lebowski Fest and things like that, and I've seen people who have shops dedicated to Lebowski memorabilia. I mean, that all traces back to you. When you see that, how does it make you feel?
Well, it's interesting and odd and stuff like that. You know, there's a great thing, by the way, on Susan Lacy's show, American Masters, mm-hmm. in which they're following, I think, Jeff, but maybe it was the Bridges family. I think it's the Bridges family. And there's a place in New York that it's a Lebowski shop. And so they put Bridges in there.
I have seen that clip, yeah.
And so some tourists come by, and they kind of look at him, and they say to the shop owner, is that Jeff Bridges? And they go, well, yeah. And they go, what's he doing? He goes, well, he just likes to hang out here all the time. Yeah. And they do this whole thing. Jeff Bridges hangs out at the Lebowski shack because he's, like, really into it. But, yeah, it's a pretty funny clip and stuff, you know. But what was the question again?
When you see Lebowski Fest, a festival about a movie that's about you, how does that make you feel?
Well, it's interesting, by the way. The thing about Lebowski Fest, it's very interesting. It's a two-night thing. Which I, you know, I don't get paid for any of this kind of stuff. I don't, you know, do it. It would be undude-like. But the first night is bands, and then they show the movie. And the second night they do it at a bowling alley, and they always get the biggest place. And people come dressed up, not just as the characters, the dude and Maude and stuff like that. They come dressed up as lines out of the movie. So there's two guys there, and one guy has a staff and a beard. And you know, he's wearing, you know, he's got a tablet in his hand and all that. And the other guy has a Dodgers uniform and it's Koufax. And I go, what are you guys? And I go, oh, 3,000 years of Jewish tradition from Moses to Sandy Koufax. You know, or, you know, I mean, and so people actually come dressed up as, you know, the crime lad, 10 people in coats and stuff like that. You know, Walter, the guy is a guy in Hawaiian shirt, who is the guy who Walter's ex-wife is seen in Hawaii,
right.
Who's not even a character in the movie.
Right.
You know,
he's just mentioned.
He's mentioned, you know. And so what people do with the lines out of the movie is absolutely brilliant, you know, and surreal and stuff like that. So that's, you know, some of that, how they've taken. Look, people take, the thing that people do with Lebowski is they use those lines. And if you go on Google Earth, you'll see it, you know, how, you know, the financial world uses over. A lot of writers, non-film writers, will use, you know, things like over the line or something like that in a financial reference. And so they're able to appropriate those, you know, reappropriate those lines to use for their own reasons in both conversation or in journalism. You know, so that's kind of an interesting, it is an interesting phenomenon. I want to say one thing about this is something like Rocky Horror Show. The people that love Lebowski have to bring a certain sense of liking irony and satire and stuff like that. That's not to say there aren't some straight-up sight gags that will play to a 5-year-old in there, and there are. But what it does is, it has all that kind of ability to be, you know, reappropriated and stuff. So it's you know, and it's just, from my point of view, by the way, I'm an icon, but I'm not a movie star, which is great. Okay, you know, there's a picture of my daughter Keely, not the one who was here last night, with Brad Pitt around his arm when we were doing something at Fahrenheit 9/11. The directors go, and Keely is like real stiff, and Brad's like, "Oh, Keely," she's like 14 at the time. That's Brad Pitt with his arm around you. You're loosen up. But the point is, we're intimidated. And even Brad Pitt, by movie stars. But the dude character is not a movie star. And when people meet me, most people have seen that movie with friends in living rooms. And the movie is about friends hanging out, you know, at the bowling alley. So what comes of that is, once they realize I'm not a total, you know, a-hole or whatever, you know, I can kind of part of that whole friend thing, you know. And that's a kind of a good thing, to be kind of instantly felt like, you know, particularly for a big, ugly guy like myself that breaks down barriers, you know, both corporate, personal, romantic, the whole nine yards. So it's an interesting thing. Some of the stuff that goes on is, like, beyond bizarre, like the Korean stuff. I've met the guys who are the frontline guys in Korea, the guys when the order comes down. The guys said, actually, you're going to push the button. And they told me, dude, we're going to call you. This is pre-Trump, by the way. And before we push any buttons, what's your mobile number? I literally have.
You'll be the first to know.
I'll be one of the first. That's an insane story. But this is the major and the colonel I met who flew in from Korea, you know, and blah, 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 you know, that kind of stuff. But it's, you know, it's surreal, you know, the whole thing. But it's good, and it's good stuff, and it's really about friendship and stuff like that, you know.
Anything else you'd want to add about the Ebert Fest or about anything Champagne folks should know about you?
Well, by the way, I come to places like this because I learn so much. I'm about to go to the university and do some classes and you know, being around town and stuff. You know, we were at the diner last night at, you know, with Andy, the director of The Fugitive, you know, the diner across the street there. And, you know, you just meet and learn things. And so, look, the big thing is right now, here's my advice to everybody. We're in very scary best of times, worst of times, times. Find five friends who you can really trust as your team. You can call up any time of the night or day and maybe do something together. Because of the internet, you have chances of succeeding with a little business or project or whatever. And also I'm suggesting people maybe rather than doing films, do short things that are 5 or 6 or 7 minutes long that have some substance that can go viral, which will then, you know, zillions of people will see, and then you can say, oh, by the way, I'm going to make a film too. But I think the art form, and that's kind of what we're doing with our classic tales to fuel our future, is they're longer, but we'll break them up into bite-sized ADD segments for me, you, and everybody else. I don't know, I shouldn't say that about you, but that, you know, we have short attention spans and maybe watching things on our phone for 5 minutes, you know, and, you know, so if it's a 30-minute classic tale, we'll cut into 6 5-minute segments. Which you could do with this radio interview and put it on the radio. It's often happens, they'll cut it into 3 or 4 segments as opposed to online. But no, this is a great time for all of us and to, you know, change the history of the world or the herstory to our story of the world. And it's happening. And the Me Too stuff and the women's marches and the DACA stuff and, you know, it's just a time of great consciousness. And activism, which doesn't necessarily mean going to a march. It may mean posting something on social media, but it means being involved in one way or another and educating ourselves to, you know, what's going on and sharing that. You know, but if you get up in the morning and you don't have your support group or somebody to talk to, it could be a scary world. I mean, I'm glad I have different kinds of partnerships. That I talk to somebody and all of a sudden it's, you know, like, oh, okay, you know, we're doing something today, you know. So that's my little tidbit to everybody I'm sharing here, you know.
Good.
But it's great to be here, and Chaz is rocking the free world and all the people, you know, from Nate and Andy and all the people that are doing it from the university. And it's just a great experience.
Good.
I'm fortunate to be here.